There are a number of ways we can look at this particular occasion. I'd like for you to think about, first of all, this guy being the first centurion. Because we know that there was another one. We know the other one was in Acts chapter 10. He was the first Gentile convert. This is not the same guy. But the fact is, what we have here is a man who is a soldier. A number of things are raised by this episode. It certainly brings to us in mind the images of the Gentiles encountered by Elijah and Elisha, both of whom were great prophets in the Old Testament who encountered and helped foreigners who had great faith, sometimes more faith than the people of Israel themselves. Remember, Elisha healed Naaman the leper. And Jesus makes a big point of that earlier in Luke about how Elijah went to a foreigner, when in fact people of Israel didn't have even that much faith. We can kind of also think of this guy here in an interesting way as kind of the invisible man. If you think about the story and the way it's told, nobody ever encounters him directly. The elders come, and it says in Luke that when the elders, after the elders come, he sends friends, but he never goes himself. Jesus never encounters him. So in a way, we never see him in the story. We see him always in the background. So he's kind of an invisible man. He never, if you were to see this as a stage play, he never comes on stage. Or you never see him directly in the narrative. He's always in the background, talking from the background, perhaps. We hear of him and see things about him, but we never actually see him on stage. There are, however, some ways that we see him, and we'll put that in quotes if you don't mind. We see some things about him. The first thing is we see him through the community he's attached to and the people that he knows. We see in verse 3 that he asked the elders to come to Jesus, the elders of the town. Now, Jesus has come back to Capernaum here, and a little side interesting note about Capernaum. In the Gospels, more miracles are recorded in the town of Capernaum than in any other single place. I don't know how significant that is, but it's just a sort of an interesting little factoid. What happens here is that through the elders, this particular man hears that Jesus is back in this town. Now, it may be significant that Jesus has performed a lot of miracles here because this centurion knows about him and he knows what he can do and he's heard about what he has done for people. So he sends the elders, who are more than happy to represent him, because it says they speak of his good reputation in the community. Verses 4 and 5. They tell Jesus, he loves our nation. He's paid for our synagogue for us. Well, what kind of man does that? See, what kind of man demonstrates to everybody in the community that he's an upstanding citizen and really cares about people? You know, you could very easily ask yourself the question here, what does your community think about you? How do they respond? What kind of things do they say about you? What do your neighbors say about you? Just an interesting, perhaps, way of seeing what this individual was about. We see him through the people that know him. Next, his friends intercede for him. Now, Matthew doesn't mention the friends, but Luke tells us that it was he actually sent friends to talk to them. So Luke basically notes he still doesn't come directly to talk to Jesus. He doesn't want to do that. He's humble. Perhaps he's sensitive to the Jewish tradition here that Jesus shouldn't really come into his house. You know, Jews are not supposed to associate with Gentiles. So perhaps he's just being sensitive to that particular tradition of the Jews. But the fact that he's sensitive to that says something about him, doesn't it? The fact that his friends are willing to speak on his behalf says even more about his standing in the community, doesn't it? He has a lot of friends. He has people who admire him. He has people who are willing to speak on his behalf, to do things for him, probably because he's already done a lot for them. Who are your friends? And who are our friends in the community? Would they be willing to stand up for you? Do you have a lot of friends in the community? You know, not every friend we have necessarily believes the gospel like we do, but they can still be our friends. And maybe it's in that friendship that we influence them. And who knows, somewhere down the road, either after we're gone or after, you know, we're moved away or ever we're not in that person's life, maybe they'll remember, you know, I remember something about Bob. He was faithful to his wife. His wife loved him, which is probably one of the things that would be a question mark. She really loves him, and I appreciate my wife for that. But the fact is, you never know what your influence is going to do, what it says about people. They don't always tell you. You know, you don't always know. So they're watching. And, you know, just think about how you affect the people in your community. We see the centurion through those people. The next thing we see about him is his character. Some of the traits based on the behavior that we have are things that make him what he is and that make him such an important character in the episode, in this episode here, and in as he encounters Jesus himself. First of all, we see that he was generous. It says he built their synagogue. Okay? I don't know how much it would have cost. And even if perhaps it wasn't a matter of cost, but a matter of energy, I think it was more a matter of cost. That's my personal belief. He either put in his time or he just put in his money. There was a generosity of spirit about that. And I know we have some people here who just, they're just generous with their time and with their money. And you probably know who some of them are. They're just like that. They give of themselves. It says in verse 5, the elder said to Jesus, he loves our nation. Something he did on a regular basis, something he said, the way he treated them, perhaps, demonstrated to them that he was a man who cared about them. There may have been times he had to pull rank on them. He had to be the centurion that he was. He had to be the authority. But he did it in a way that demonstrated he really cared about those people. That would be a pretty good model for us, wouldn't it? Do we really care about the people that we work with, we're our neighbors with, we encounter at CVS or wherever we're shopping, whatever we do? Does it demonstrate to them that you really care for them? That's a pretty big and powerful statement about him and about us, isn't it? He was compassionate. He cares for a servant. It says, who was highly valued. Now, we could perhaps take the negative approach here, that this guy was his servant, and the only reason he was highly valued is because if he died, he would have had to go buy another one, or get another one somehow. Judging from all the things I see about this particular person, though, I don't think that was why he considered him highly valued. I think he just cared about this servant. I have the suspicion this was a very good servant, and I kind of have the suspicion you have a little good interplay here. You have a really good master, and you have a servant who says, hey, this guy's pretty good to me. I'm going to give him my best. So you have this sort of, this dynamic between the two of them. They probably both affected each other. The fact is, this centurion really likes this servant of his. He's really highly valued. He does everything I ask him to do. He does it well. We get along. We like each other. That's the impression I get. Maybe I'm looking at this with rose-colored glasses, but you know, judging from all the other things I see about the centurion, that's the way that it makes sense to me as to why he considered him highly valued. The next trait we see is the one that seems to just jump out at us more than anything else, and that's his humility. He will not even let Jesus come to him because he's not worthy. Maybe a little part of this, again, is something I said earlier, and that is that maybe he's sensitive to the Jewish traditions, but the fact is, he's still very humble. He doesn't look at those things as stupid or as, he doesn't look at them in a condescending way. He sees them as, I'm going to respect those things. And Jesus, this guy, I don't even deserve to have him come to my house. Knowing what I know about him, knowing what he's capable of, I don't deserve to have him come to my house. Think about the mind of a soldier. We, you know, are thinking about that on Memorial Day weekend here, so maybe there's an interesting tie-in that we have as we think about this particular soldier. He understands a couple of things. First of all, he understands authority. That's the key, perhaps, to his great faith and to what he sees in Jesus, isn't it? He says, look, tell Jesus, I'm a man under authority. I know how this works. I say to one guy, go, and he goes. I say to another guy, come, and he comes. And if I say that to my servant, the same thing happens. I say jump, they say how high. You know, that was sort of the laughing joke that we used to say in the military. When your drill sergeant says jump, you say how high. So that's what he was. He knew. He understood that. He understood the chain of command. For better or worse, he knew it. Now, we really don't know where his confidence in Jesus himself comes from, other than perhaps he's heard the reports. And he has no reason not to believe that Jesus is capable of all the things that he says he's capable of, or that all the reports tell us he's capable of. He had no reason to doubt them. Soldiers also understand conflict. Now, that may not relate specifically to this here, but you see, judging from all these other things, we can see he's not just some bloodthirsty, violent beast. And that sometimes is the false image we get about soldiers. I think most of us know better, but some people like to try to perpetrate that myth. They're not like that. Most of the soldiers we know, most of the soldiers I know and I ever encountered, even when I was in the Army, they weren't like that. They understand conflict has that it just happens sometimes. And that we need people like that who are, dare I say the word, they are violent with a purpose. Nobody likes that. Nobody wants to do that. But we live in a world of conflict. Soldiers understand that. They understand authority. They understand the need to be confrontational on certain issues. And I wouldn't say that all wars, all soldiers are perfect human beings, but those kind of conflicts do happen. He was a soldier with a heart. I think most of them are. So we see his character. We see something about him because of the way he's portrayed here. It's a pretty good character. And it's a tremendous amount of faith. And that's where we get to what we see is Jesus' reaction to him. We are told in verse 9, after he hears what the elders say about him, after he hears what the message is from his friends, Jesus marvels at him. One commentary suggested, I'm not sure this is a really good way to translate it here. It may be helpful. It says, instead of saying the word marveled, it says he admired him. There is a certain amount of admiration here, isn't it? But he's just kind of struck by this. And, there is perhaps an element of surprise here. But Jesus, looks at that. He says, you know what? I haven't even found that kind of faith among my own people. I can almost hear Jesus saying, why shouldn't I expect that out of some of you guys? he turns to the crowd and he says to them, I haven't seen this kind of faith among the people of Israel, among you. He doesn't use to say it that way, but that's really what he means. So he's really just taken by this guy. And he says, basically, his comment is, this faith outshines anything I have seen up to this point from a Gentile soldier. Now, Matthew 8, verses 11 through 12, actually inserts a comment here that Luke doesn't put until later on in the narrative. But what he says that Jesus says here, he says, after he says, truly I tell you, with no one in Israel have I found such faith, Matthew adds the following statement. I tell you, many will come from east and west and recline at table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven, while the sons of the kingdom will be thrown into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So the people who are supposed to be the ones receiving the kingdom, who are the sons of the kingdom, in this case the people of Israel, some of you aren't going to make it. But some of these folks that you don't think you ought to even associate with, again, I'm interjecting a few things here, but that's what's happening, they're the ones that are going to enter the kingdom of God. And certainly, we have here a precursor to the centurion in Acts chapter 10, don't we? this sort of anticipates that perhaps there's going to be faith coming from such a place as the Gentile world. Jesus challenges the crowd here, just like it's probably a challenge for all of us. The kind of faith that he has, that's what this story is really all about. He says, I haven't found such faith among you. Well, that's the point he wants to get. You know, it's almost like to me the healing is sort of a sidebar here. The healing is incidental to the story of faith of the centurion. Now, the servant gets healed, but that's only because of this marvelous, fantastic faith of this centurion. And what this story does is give us some insight into the nature of faith, into the power of faith, into the kind of faith that we are called to have. Again, we see a forerunner of the mission to the Gentiles, and perhaps Jesus is preparing the Jews and the disciples and the apostles and everybody to see that the Gentiles too are worth saving, and they will be a part of what in fact will be the mission of the gospel to the entire world. And it will be the second centurion in Acts chapter 10 who will open the door for many other Gentiles who will believe. Guess what? That's us. Thank you, soldiers. Again, we can thank a couple of soldiers for that. So we just conclude with a couple of thoughts here. Basically, we're challenged to see this man's faith. You know, again, I would say that the healing in the story is kind of incidental to the point Luke is trying to make. The healing comes, but the centurion, he knows Jesus can do it. He doesn't even question that. So it's like, okay, go ahead, just say the word, and it'll happen. And it's that kind of faith that Jesus, I think, can turn to the crowds. And think of yourself in the crowd here as Jesus saying, I haven't even found that kind of faith among you. That's the kind of faith that we want to have. Is our faith of such a challenging nature? We're challenged also by his connections to the community. Would your community stand up for you like it did for him? I mean that not as a criticism, just as a challenging thought. What are the connections you have with the people you live with the people you work with your family members, with your extended family members? What kind of reaction would they have to you should your need be great for something? Do you have connections with a community? Do you have connections that you can rely on when you need them? This guy had them. He earned them. He earned them by being what he was, by doing the kind of things that showed generosity and compassion and humility. Think about the connection for your own community. And finally, would Jesus admire your faith had you encountered him in some way? Are you humble enough, perhaps even to ask these questions about yourself? And I know as well as anybody else that when I'm asking you to do that, I'm doing the same thing. I'm asking these questions about myself. So my encouragement today simply is, remember the centurion. We've already asked you to remember soldiers. It's Memorial Day. That's what we're supposed to be doing, is thinking about them and remember them. Remember this guy. Remember this soldier. Remember the other centurion in Acts chapter 10. Humility, compassion, faith. All things that he displays that are worth imitating for us. Think about them now. Think about them over the next couple of days as we celebrate Memorial Day. But think about them while we together stand and sing our song of invitation.